Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Vaibhav Dhomkundwar, founder of Better Capital. Vaibhav is India's leading solo general partner, having founded Better Capital and leading it to become one of the most promising early-stage venture funds in the country. Built on top of fundamentals such as early conviction, phenomenal speed in decision-making, and compounded network effects, Better has successfully invested in more than 250 companies to date, some of which include the incredible institutions such as Open Bank, Slice, M2P, Rupeek, Teachmint, and many more. Through the next 90 minutes, we uncover how Vaibhav has established Better Capital in the ecosystem and paved the way for the next generation of solo capitalists in the country. We discuss his framework of investing, building conviction, process of identifying relevant markets with a forward-looking lens, the importance of systems thinking in building scalable mechanisms, and understand deeply how he thinks about portfolio construction, portfolio support at scale, and building a brand by writing in public. This episode has Vaibhav share a plethora of compounded learnings in the most candid manner I have heard, and I have cherished each part of the conversation. I am certain you will too, but before we get started, here is a quick word about our sponsor. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in, that is spelled as strideventures.in. And with that, let's dive in to the 125th episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Vaibhav Dhomkundwar of Better Capital.
Thank you so much, Vaibhav, for joining me. Incredibly delighted to be hosting you.
Thank you, Jivraj. This is a long time coming and I'm happy to be here.
Glad to hear that, Vaibhav. And definitely, I think it's been a privilege to work alongside you very briefly. And what I want to uncover through the next 60 minutes is primarily how you've got in here, because there's definitely a uniqueness to what you've been able to establish as a solo capitalist in the country. And to uncover not just the journey, but also the learnings will be very, very crucial. But as we get started, I would love to know from you how this word or phrase has emerged in the country, because in the US and Valley, we've seen, you know, a lot of solo GPs emerge and there's been a culture around it, but not as much in India. And only now have we seen this on Twitter and the others, right? So maybe talk to us about what was it like, especially when you started, and how you've seen solo capitalists emerge in the country. And I think that'll be a good precursor to the conversation.
No, that's great. Look, I think it's funny that we're talking about this, because when I started in 2018, I think there was no such term. And some of my friends who basically said, hey, how are you going to do this without a team? And then they said, oh, you're like this person in the US, or you are like that, and so forth. And then somebody came up with the name Solo Capitalist. And I sent that article to some of those friends. I said, so I think finally there is something you can call me. So look, I think different things have happened over the last several years for this concept of solo GP to emerge. Some of it has been sort of folks who are saying that we wanted to do investment, the kind of the investment model in a particular way. Some of them who were looking to move on from their firms to do a specific strategy that was closer to their heart. And that's why they said, hey, you know, I can do it on my own, so I'll do it, and so on and so forth. And I think it's a combination of a variety of different things that led to this particular thing. Now, having said that, I think India, obviously, it was a very new thing. And for me, to be honest, I didn't start saying I want to be a solo GP. In fact, we'll get into this later, but I did not even start saying that, okay, let me go start a venture firm. So I think it is more of an outcome that we all look back, to be honest, instead of saying that, hey, you know, I had the vision of being India's number one or the earliest solo GP or something like that. I think it's all hindsight. And to a large extent, I think, at least for better, we are building a venture firm. Whether you call us solo GP or not, it doesn't matter. And we are doing it in a particular way, and get into that in some time. But we were definitely the first one, like you mentioned. And I think it did pave the way for many others to sort of think, if this is for them, after looking at what we were doing. And we did it at scale, right? So 2018 and 19 were sort of early years, but then after that, we scaled it very, very effectively and at a good pace. So, and I've been a mentor to several of them as well, who are sort of exploring this model. So I think it's here to stay. It has a lot of advantages and disadvantages, and it is important to know those, right? Because look, I think being solo is generally hard in life. Being the solo founder is very, very hard. And I'll tell you that being a solo investor is actually even harder because of how opaque the venture ecosystem is in general about how to do things. So I think it's not for everybody. It is very, very hard. It might look fancy in some ways just because of the buzzwords. And like we were discussing earlier, I think this is all about having a conversation going beyond the buzzword. It's a real thing. It will have many takers in the years to come. Some of them will find that it is for them, and some of them will just think that, hey, you know, it's not for them, right? So we'll see how it goes. But it's here to stay for sure.
Absolutely. I think that's super helpful and paves the pathway for, you know, what's ahead, because you mentioned a bunch of components there of how you build this. And what's very interesting is you don't call yourself an investor per se. You call yourself the founder of Better Capital, right? Or Better Labs, or a multiple different notions to that. If you were to take us back in time and maybe just give us a precursor to what the thought process was. You built companies in the past, but then you came up with this concept where a lot of the things that you've defined have become guardrails for other investors and aspirational in nature as well. Be it speed, velocity, be it the decision-making, early conviction, looking at things in force. So maybe talk to us about some of those pillars, especially, let's say, from the vantage point that you've now gained. And how did you basically find PMF for what you've now started doing and effectively scaling, right? So from an investor or founder standpoint, what was the initial insight like for Better Capital and what it did become? I would love to know that, Vaibhav.
Absolutely. So let's just zoom out, right, Jivraj? And I think if you zoom out, I basically, over the last 20 years, this is sort of act three for me. Act one was a Silicon Valley formula, you know, five founders, enterprise software company, built it. Eventually, the company was sold. And then act two was the exact opposite, self-financed, bootstrap, solo founder, startup studio called Better Labs. And Act 3 is essentially Better Capital. However, in many ways, Act 3 is essentially Act 2++. Before starting Better Capital in 2018, I ran a startup studio that I was a solo founder of, and I bootstrapped it myself for 10 plus years. That was a lot of 0 to 1 and 1 to 10 journeys, right? And much of our wealth was created during that time. It was also the 2000s decade, which was probably the worst in a long time, just in terms of two big downturns and, you know, just a lot of really not great things for entrepreneurship. But it also led to a whole bunch of us thinking very first principles in terms of saying, hey, what are we building? What value are we providing? And, you know, why does this need to exist? And why should we be profitable with this product or business and things like that? So I think Better Labs, the startup studio, was really a lot of 0 to 1 journeys, right? Some of them succeeded and got to the next phase, and some of them failed. But we were able to sort of build it on a very profitable platform at scale, never missed payroll ever. In fact, I haven't missed payroll in my entire entrepreneurial career. And I think that, you know, irrespective of where life takes us, and, you know, outcomes are very relative these days, as you know, I think not missing payroll is sometimes, I feel, something I deeply respect every entrepreneur, whether they are bootstrapped, fund wanted or whatever it is, right? Because very, very hard. Now, a lot of that journey really built my core DNA for building ideas, being brutally honest about what's working, what's not working. And especially in that mode where we're not raising capital, we're self-financing, right? So your customer revenue is your ultimate truth. So we learned to be honest with ourselves. And I think that is the core that drives Better Capital today as well. And the transition to the Better Capital model was really triggered post 2015-ish, I would say, where it felt like, you know, money in the private markets had changed irreversibly. So I think a lot of public market money started to come into privates and it started to go more and more upstream. And when that happened, you know, I think I questioned myself about is our studio model really worth it, because we are always constrained. So I think one option was that, hey, you know, we go raise money in the studio model and kind of scale it. So we are resourcing with the correct amount of capital and correct kind of resources, talent, I mean, right? So the other was, hey, you know, what if I flip it, right? So instead of the build first studio model, can we do invest first capital model? We're doing the exact same thing. We are basically doing what we've been doing for since 2005 or six, let's say, which is thinking of ideas, validating them, building conviction and things like that, right? So that is what actually led us to start Better Capital in 2018. In 2017, I think was that kind of the big analysis and decision-making year where I made zero investments personal as well. And then January 2018, when we wrote the first pre-seed check to open, was when Better Capital started. Right. So Better Capital in many ways is our studio plus plus journey for me. And I think that's why there is just so much that has gone into that model. And again, when you put this in perspective to the first discussion that we were having, I wasn't really thinking I want to start a venture firm or be a solo GP or anything like that. I basically said, look, I think the capital markets have changed. I have very, very, let's say, rich experience from more failures than successes. And I think I can apply it somewhere, right? So I think that's what led to Better Capital, where we said we are going to actually just be a pre-seed investor. Now, we identified pre-seed as a big white space in India. I think it is just disappointing to see high quality teams struggling to raise that first $500,000. And I think that became sort of our wedge, because we, having built stuff for a very long time, we were comfortable building conviction on just ideas or pure plans and things like that, right? So I think that's what led us to sort of the Better Capital model. And, you know, I think we like every project that I do, I basically said, I'll give it 2 years. In 2 years, either we fail or we scale. And I think 18-19 was that. We loved it. I said, okay, this is sort of a potentially the biggest unlock for everything that I may have learned, for whatever it's worth, in the last 20 years, right? And I think 2020 onwards, we scaled. Funnily, during the pandemic as well, but it's been a crazy ride.
Absolutely. And I think we've all been glad to have witnessed it. But that's very crucial. I think a lot of interesting points there. What I'd love to double click on is the aspect around, you mentioned disappointing early stage venture capital, right? What was the scene like? And I mean, what are the fundamentals that you thought you could do differently? Was it all planned in foresight, where you were like, okay, we're going to be fast? The guardrails that you've now established for Better Capital, were they all thought through then and there? What was it like in terms of the model that you're going to go? I understand the insight very well now, but what was it like in terms of fundamentals, that this is what we're going to stand for and this is how we're going to establish it? What was that like?
Yeah, no, great question. Look, I think the raw answer is that in 2018, I didn't know so much, because like we discussed earlier, the venture ecosystem is very opaque. There are nobody knows how things work and how people take decisions and what their learnings are and things like that. It's starting to change slightly, but it's still very, very hard. So I think we basically knew why we were doing, correct? Like I explained. So the why was clear and the purpose was clear. And since there was very little information, I did what I always believed in, which is, you know, if you remember that book called First Break All the Rules. So we basically said, okay, first we're going to break all the rules. And what that really means is not really breaking all the rules, you know, that's stupid. What it really means is you question everything. So you question everything from a first principles basis, saying that, hey, why is this way? Why is that that way? And do I think differently? Why do I think differently? And things like that. And that's what essentially led us to sort of thinking about how we are going to operate from a capital structure perspective, from a stage perspective, and everything. So we basically said two things. One is, what do we want to do and are we really good at it? So I said, you know, my biggest strength is 0 to 1 and 1 to 10. And that's where we're going to focus on. We are not going to invest in anything that is further up. We don't even understand it and definitely don't understand it from a venture investing perspective. But I felt very confident about my ability to build conviction very early based on my 20 years of just building and failing and sometimes succeeding. So that's why we said we will do early. And as we had seen sort of the Indian market for a few years before 2018, we knew that that was the gap. And the gap was essentially there weren't enough people who were ready to build very early conviction on those ideas. And a bunch of things happened. Look, I think if you look at India over the last 15 years, we first started with very transactional business investing. Now, that's not my skill set at all. My skill set is product first, distribution first. That's what I've built. That's what I've learned. That's what I've lived my entrepreneurial career around. But I think post-Jio, we suddenly started to see the number of internet-connected devices and the MAUs grow incrementally month on month, right? And that's when it also felt that it is the right time for us to do what we understand. So we were not really driven by what others were investing in the Indian market till then. And that's why, you know, in the early days, I think almost everybody felt that we are taking very contrarian bets. And contrarian is a nice word to say it. Mostly people didn't understand why we were doing what we were doing. Because look, we were very early in neobanks, very early in SME digitization, very early in agri-tech, sort of cohort-based courses. We've invested almost every company that we loved and things like that, right? So I think it was the conviction building part that became our wedge. In saying that, look, we feel comfortable about that, right? Now, that has a compounding effect as well, because if you are that product first, distribution first founder, and we are earlier than others to build conviction, we are saying that, look, I have done the 0 to 1 journey so many times that I'm just not going to ask you questions to which you will give me theoretical answers. I'm just going to focus on what really matters. And we're very market first investors from that perspective. So once that is clear, we are able to build conviction and then really back our founders in every which way, right? So that was one part of Betterm. The second part was the capital side as well. As in, you know, again, when you go back to the first principles, you say, hey, you know, there is this whole, you know, I raise a fund, then I deploy a bunch, I keep some reserve, then I raise another fund. And, you know, LPs, you usually do 3 funds back to back over 10 plus years to eventually figure out if this was actually the right GP to back or not. While all of it is fine, for me, I had the optionality. I did not need fees or anything else. So I said, you know, this, I'd like it to be more performance driven, let's say, number one. But then selfishly, I also felt that I wanted to be unconstrained. So we essentially chose a model on the capital side that unconstrained my decision making, right? Because what happens is that when you raise a fund, with a story, you're accountable for that, sticking to that story, and the market moves at a different pace altogether. So we basically said, this does not make sense, and I don't want to be constrained by that entire thing. So we said, hey, you know, is there another model? And I had seen some of my friends do SPVs instead of funds to start with, and I felt that actually made a ton of sense. Now, look, I think a lot of people don't understand what I think the word syndicate, like I've told many of you guys, is a complete misnomer. I think SPVs are incredibly powerful capital structure systems for investing. And I think if you look at the SPAC boom that happened over the last 2-3 years, what are SPACs? SPACs are SPVs as well. Correct. So I said, you know, it's no fees, unconstrained, something where somebody doesn't have to trust me with a very large check and see me screw up over 10 years. They can actually see me perform and then say, hey, we actually like what you're doing. And it looks like you're doing what you said you're doing. So I think those are the two main things, Yuvraj, that we did from a first principles perspective. And obviously, nobody had done that in India, right? So it was an experiment. And again, I think, look, when you're on your own for a long time and you survive, you sort of build some level of confidence in your ability / intelligence to say, hey, you know, I think I want to do it this way and I think I can pull it off, right? So I think those are the two things that became foundational to Better Capital. And they both sort of helped us in so many ways. I'll give you just one example on the capital side. In June of 2020, from June to December of 2020, right after the pandemic, when we went, when we fell down like a cliff in terms of sentiment and markets and everything, and then rose up like a cliff again, we actually did 12 investments in 4 months, all in EdTech. Now, if I were a fund with a portfolio construction constraint and all of those things, I couldn't do it. But we were able to do it because, you know, we had a capital structure that allowed it. And we knew why we were doing it. And we basically have at least 3 breakout companies from those. So I think there's a lot to learn from sort of saying that, look, if I'm doing something new, can I first question the rules, not to question them, but to understand them well enough so that I can structure whatever it is that I am doing in a way that I can live with. So I think these are a few examples, you know, just to sort of double click on those aspects.
Super. No, I think that's very, very helpful to understand and get an insight to the levers that helped establish Better Capital, because I think we understand the insight, the why, and also a bit of the how. But maybe focusing on the first part of things, right? You mentioned conviction building a bunch of times. And I think there's a lot of conjecture to how does Vaibhav do this in the ecosystem, right? Like, how do you make decisions the way you do and in the velocity that you do? I know it'll be difficult to frame everything in one, and there's a lot of conjecture to also patterns and everything in venture. But if you were to give us an insight to, okay, this is the primary fundamentals that you're going into something with, be it a conversation, a meeting, whatnot, and this is what you're looking at in terms of an outcome, and that's how the decision arrives, I think that'll be helpful, especially to founders and investors listening who are curious to understand what this model looks like in actuality, right?
Yeah, no, great question again. Look, I think I have this funny thing where if you just go to bettercapital.vc, click on portfolio and scroll through the big list, somebody can look at it and say, oh, wow, this is a massive spray and pray machine, right? And I would say that as well, let's say. However, if you talk to each of those founders, you will realize that there is a clear story behind every single investment we've made, clear story behind every single thing we've done, right? And I think the simplest thing is that when we are doing these 0-1 bets, right, when we are betting on just an early product or an early product idea and things like that, we are broadly asking what is it that we are building, what we are solving, and do I personally just believe in sort of real value delivered, right? So for example, if you look at what I said earlier, in the startup studio that we did, we didn't raise any outside capital, and the brutal truth was our customers, this is good or this is terrible, right? And it shows in terms of your invoices, are they going up or are they going down? So I think we're very used to sort of that brutal truth thinking, right? So when we are looking at founders and meeting them very early, we are essentially saying, hey, just tell me simply, what is this company? What is Rupeek? What is Open? What is Teachmint? What is Phalo? What is Cytel, for example? We are first trying to understand that, right? And I think you can go and ask any of our founders. I don't think any of them ever felt like they were doing a pitch meeting to an investor, because I think I don't have that vibe, maybe. You know, the funny story, Anushree of Spark was speaking with me for the first time, and she was just relaxed, sitting back and talking. And I was like, hey, man, I mean, you know, how come you're so relaxed, let's say, right? And it's almost like, are you relaxed because this is not as serious, or are you relaxed because of something else? And she's like, well, you know, you are so relaxed, that's why I'm so relaxed. So I think when we do these initial meetings, right, they are all, you know, I'm a founder, which means I'm a founder for 2+ decades, which means you're generally an optimist, right? So I'm going into these meetings thinking, how will this work? I'm not going into this meeting trying to disprove the thesis, That's not my job. I am very different, right, from that perspective. And I think it works against me also in sometimes, but I think I'm aware of that. So we kind of have some rails to guard against it. Now, we are broadly from a frame. So that's kind of the core of, you know, the qualitative aspects of how we approach things, right? Now, the framework from a decision-making perspective is really market-first thinking, right? Because my view is simple. Having, again, operated for a decent amount of time, I think if the market is just not there, or if you get your market wrong, there's no way you can build a large company. There is no way this is going to work, right? So we're very focused on sort of saying, what is it that these guys are building? So from a market perspective, right? And I actually take very few meetings, contrary. I mean, there are so many of my friends in the ecosystem. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? And I go, dude, I haven't seen so many of these things, right? Because I meet very few companies, and I meet very few companies because I do that market filter first. I want to be sensitive to the founder's time as well. I'm not generally saying, what are you building? I'm saying that, hey, you know, I actually like where you're going with this. Let's talk. That time, I'm basically already sure about why I am in that meeting. And I am going into that meeting from a positive perspective, by the way, right? As in, hey, I like this. This can be interesting. Let me see what this is about. And then I'm basically trying to understand the clarity of thought. Now, clarity of thought is very important. I mean, you know, a lot of our founders will tell you that I can pitch their companies better than they can pitch it themselves. I write some of my press releases, some of the press releases myself too, because I think articulation is where everything changes. And recently I came up with sort of a format, I call it the pitch thread, which Sudhanshu of Czech essentially, you know, introduced to me first because he wrote that. And I said, hey, I actually love it because I like how you are explaining your company in this format far better than what we've talked in the past. So we are basically saying from a framework perspective, what is the market? How clear are you? And can you explain me what is this company? And I have an example, sort of a blast from the past with Rupeek, where a very good friend of mine had introduced me to the company. Actually, he shared me the deck and I said, oh, you know, this was kind of pre-starting Better. I was doing my angel checks and we obviously invested as Better Capital in Rupeek later as well. And I was like, gold loans, you know, I was looking for this product first, you know, distribution first, tech stuff and things like that. And then Sumit happened to reach out and we said, we'll catch up. And like a 30-minute meeting went on for an hour and a half. And we basically said, you know, I basically looked at everything and I said, look, I think what you're doing is you're actually reimagining the front end of asset-backed lending, starting with gold loans. And he said, yeah. I said, why don't you say that once somewhere in your slide? Now, obviously, Subhi is a phenomenal founder, probably India's most underrated one, I would say, building a great, great company. I ended up investing and partnering with him very closely. We still chat like, you know, every quarter or once in 6 months and really talk strategic stuff, right? You know, what is Rupeek and things like that, right? And I think this is an example just to give you sort of, you know, we are saying what is that company? What is, like, you know, we did a construction play recently called Cytle, which is taking a very different view at construction itself. And we said, what is it? What is the downside? What are we right about? So we ask all the hard questions up front. And remember, I'm getting into this meeting where you're not feeling like you're pitching to an investor. So you're your own. And we are just asking questions not to negate the point of view. We are asking the question just to say, hey, how can this work? So I think that is the part of the framework that has really helped us, because then we also get sort of that honest truth from the founders, and it is very collaborative, right? Because look, I don't know the right answer either. We will be wrong in many, many, many things. But I think that sort of has helped us to say, hey, you know, with our market first thinking, can we honestly ask all the right questions? Can we remove all the noise? I do not depend on what anybody else thinks. Even if everybody passes, we still do it if we love it. And we'll do it only because we are very clear about our why. And Jivraj, that, you know, one thing that has helped us the most is because we are very clear about why we are doing something. And because we have that relationship with our founders, we're getting insights and truths every week, every month, we are learning. I am learning faster than I have ever in my entire entrepreneurial career, right? And I think in investing, that data and insights. You know, what was I right about? What was I wrong about? What was I right about? What was I wrong about? And brutal honesty. I think that is what has been very central. So I think, honestly, I think 2018 and 19, I was so raw as an investor, right? And obviously, and I knew it, and I did not assume that I knew what I was doing to the depth that I wanted to get to. But today, after 200 plus investments, we have so much data and so much insight. And not a single dollar is a spray and pray investment for us, not one. And that has helped us, right? Because at the end of the day, remember, my purpose of doing this is not to start a venture firm and raise fund after fund every 2 years. My whole thing was, hey, you know, I was building companies a particular way. I want to do it another way. So I think that's been sort of central to us. And honestly, I think just incredibly thankful to our founders, because I think the magic is all there. And I think my intelligence is really a subset of theirs, not my own, right? And I think just incredibly thankful for that, those partnerships, right? Because they are very honest partnerships that we could just never be more thankful for.
Absolutely. That's phenomenal to hear. I think that's super comprehensive, Vaibhav, and thanks for sharing it. That has a lot of levers that define the fundamentals of early stage investing, in my opinion. Goes to show the importance of being able to articulate well enough, ask the right questions, be brutally honest, which are all principles which effectively apply to founders or operators or investors can be incredibly powerful. I love that entire piece. But, you know, a very quick segue, maybe. If you were to flip this question, and you've been a part of multiple first conversations with founders, right? Many of whom you've ended up investing in. If I were to ask you 2-3 highlights that have stood out in first conversations across the board, right? If you were to pick up those threads and give me a singularity, what would that be? As an early stage founder listening to you, what are you most blown away with by a founder post a 30-40 minute conversation?
It's always just one thing, Jivraj, honestly, right? Which is their ability to explain me why they are doing what they're doing, right? The inspiration. Because, you know, I've been on my own for 20 plus years and it's not easy. You know, so their why and how well they understand the business, all of that is encapsulated in that, boss, why are you doing it? Why are you so confident? What is the key insight? And I think when I hear that honest thing, I think most of my, I don't remember what percentage, but a very small percentage of my first meetings actually have the decks for more than 5 or 10 minutes, right? I think it's more about finding that one simple idea. There is a phrase, there is a simple idea, right? Jerry and Pranav at Colo, they're doing sort of this home construction marketplace that is content first, right? I mean, there's nobody who's doing that, right? And I said, hey, you know, I love it. And tell me why you are doing it. And I think it was very useful to understand where they are coming from. Because remember, I've been a founder, I have this bias when I go into that meeting of what it can become. And I'm trying to just keep that shut and hear it from them. And I think when they are able to express it very clearly, we're able to move very fast. Teachmint is a great example. They sent me a deck on Sunday. They had the first call, their first investor meeting on a Monday evening, and their deck was solid. I mean, I didn't even need it, but Mihir being who he is, he said, give me 10 minutes, I'll walk you through everything. He's just a systematic, just crazily systematic team. And they went through their whole thing, all of their individual roles and everything. And I committed at the end of it because I was very clear about wanting to do investment exactly like that. Their pitch covered everything, but they was just so clear about why they are doing it and how they are thinking. Now, remember, every journey evolves a lot, but at any stage of that journey, you have to be very clear about the why. And I think that is the single most thing. So whenever I have walked away from a meeting not being clear about, you know, how I think about it, it has been because it is just not so crisp. And when you know, you're actually very clear. Right? If you ask me about, you know, my LP meetings with Better Capital, are just simple. You know, I'm not pitching. I'm just sharing why I'm doing what I'm doing. And then they have to decide if this is a fit for them. So it applies to me as well. And I have to be clearer and clearer. So that's all. Just one thing.
Absolutely. That's golden. I love that. Moving further, I think the very interesting question, and I'm personally curious to understand this, is that so much of venture excellence, at least the way people say, comes from diverse perspectives, right? While the decision remains to be an individual's, at venture funds, you have the advantage of having many perspectives on board, and these are usually even conflicting perspectives. How do you as a solo GP manage that aspect of the pie, right? Is there a lack of too many perspectives coming in, or is judgment individually sometimes a bottleneck? I would love to know what you think about that.
No, I think this is a very important question, honestly. And I think for everybody who is running a sort of solo GP models, right? And remember, I think we're not running a solo GP model because we want to. I just have been solo for too long in my life to change that now, right? But I think what you mentioned is a very important aspect of venture investing, because look, it is very, very hard. And the earlier you go, the lesser the data, more the ambiguity. And you are, you can look back and say, hey, I was so smart about all these things, but that's complete BS, right? I think what you need is, hey, what am I learning so that every new decision I make about a new investment or doubling down on a follow-on round, how am I doing it better? Am I actually getting better? So that is the objective. Now, for that objective, let's say when you are part of a larger firm, you have the internal sort of machinery, whether it's the analysts who are bringing a whole bunch of research together, whether it's your fellow GPs who are saying, who are voting on it / commenting based on their experience and sort of being bullish or bearish and giving you those perspectives. I think that is an important part, right? And it has its own pros and cons for another day, but it is important, right? And what you're getting from all of that, Jivraj, is actually data and insights. Eventually, it is that particular GP who's saying, hey, you know, is this something I'm going to cross the line on? And in my case, it's just me. So I think I want that insight always, right? I, in fact, want more insight, and I want the best part of those insights and not the bad parts of those insights. So what I've done is two things, right? One is, like I said, we actually learn from our investments at scale. If I were at a larger firm, I would have done, let's say, 30, 40, 50 investments over a 15-year period. I have done 200 in 4 years. And I've done in the way that I said I've done, which is I am learning. So I'm just learning faster, hopefully. Now, I think a lot of it depends on my intelligence. And I'm telling you, I feel smarter than I was in 2018. So hopefully that continues, right? Because we all need to grow. But I'm just getting that insight. Real insight, what's working, what's not working across sectors. So if you ask me cohort-based courses, what is working, where is it going, what scales, what doesn't scale, I know it. SME digitization, what is possible, what is not possible, distribution, CACs, monetization, I know what's working and what's not working. And remember, not everything is working ever for anybody, whether you're a solo GP or a big firm. Right. What is important is knowing, and I'm getting that data directly from our founders. And because we have this ground zero relationships, I am getting raw data. And if you ask any of our founders, I usually start with two questions. You know, what is, you know, the company, right? What is WAGMI? What is Cytle? What is Teachmint? What is Philo? I always ask that, right? Because that changes, right? And the second is tell me all the bad news. Correct. So the way I am making up for getting to that objective of better data for decision making is, one part is this, actual real insights. The second part is essentially sort of, you know, the zoom out perspective that you need from somebody who is not embedded in the same place as you are. So I have very few close friends, LPs, advisors, largely in the US, who've done this for a long time. Several of them are growth stage investors. They can look at any company as an Excel sheet and have a view of it, which I can't, which is very additive to us. And I think brainstorming with them over the last several years has brought another flavor of insight and data to evaluate our companies and say, hey, why are we doing this? And are all the risks covered? So having been a risky entrepreneur for a very long time, I also am a big believer in risk mitigation itself, because technically you can't really fail if you get the basics right. So when I'm going into these things, we are saying, hey, what is the downside? What could I go wrong on? And that's why I remember when we are talking during that first meeting, I want clarity of thought, right? So all of that is essentially going in. It's not perfect. It is constantly evolving. And I can't claim to say that, you know, we've got similar signals to make the best decision every single time, like a larger firm may have and things like that. But I think I am saying that we are building our own system. And when we build our own system, our learning compounds. And I'm fairly sure that we are making better decisions today than we were making last year or the year before that, right? So again, it's an evolving process and we have a long way to go.
Got it. No, that's very helpful. I think goes to show that learning definitely compounds, and sometimes faster feedback mechanisms and dependency can be a huge lever in making it happen. That's very interesting. And I think the other aspect of what as a solo GP you need to do is build out that portfolio, and in your case, a scalable one. And if you were to, you know, just figure that piece out, I'd love to understand from you how you look at portfolio construction, and more importantly, the value add piece, right? Which is a loosely held word in the ecosystem now. But considering that so much of your vantage point can be leveraged well by early stage founders, however, you only have finite time, how do you make sense out of enabling that, okay, you're constructing a right portfolio, things like that. That's one piece. And this other piece is, while it gets built out, how do you ensure that there's decent touch, you're there for them when required, and how you define portfolio support?
Got it. So let's talk about it in two parts, right? One is the portfolio construction itself, and then portfolio support as a second part. So I think from a portfolio construction perspective, again, it is one of those things that was very fundamental for me to understand what does it even mean. And I think it feels like portfolio construction is more an outcome of the capital structure that you have for your fund and less of what you have to do. Correct. So let's say you raise a certain fund or a certain fund size, and you promise a certain story, then you have to create a portfolio that fits that story. And you have to create a portfolio that returns that, you know, 3 to 5x based on that. Again, if you look at it very fundamentally, all of that is somewhat uncorrelated to how the market is moving, where the largest venture scale opportunities may be, and so on and so forth. And so I think for us, we didn't want to stick with that traditional view of portfolio construction. And we wanted to take a more fundamental view, going back to why we were doing Better Capital in the first place, right? We were doing it to build companies like we were doing at, you know, our startup studio in a slightly different way. While we really, really, really understand and appreciate the value of portfolio construction, we wanted to have those constraints for the right reasons and not for the wrong reasons, right? And we basically said, look, at the end of the day, keep away all these buzzwords. Venture or early stage venture is all about investing and owning some of the best companies that will be created every single decade. That's all. Everything else is man-made models and constraints. And as you saw from Andreessen's model or YC or the Sequoia memo, everything is changing. And it is actually changed forever. When we write it, it has changed about 5 years ago. Correct. So I think I had the liberty to ask those questions. I did not have to follow a recipe just to raise a fund. So we basically said, well, you know, this is great. Let's take the best part of it. But then let's do what we want to do, which is we want to be part of building companies that we believe need to be built. So that's what portfolio construction is for us, in the sense that we are basically, let's say, you know, fintech and edtech is kind of the deepest portfolio besides SaaS for us. SaaS is evergreen. I think it will continue to grow, and there will be a lot of problems to solve for a long period of time. But for fintech and edtech in India, we took a large number of bets over a short period of time with a very clear view of where we think value was and the opportunity was. And, you know, we are at a point where we won't do something unless it is completely knew that that's a space that we haven't covered, right? Or our companies won't cover. So I think we look at portfolio. I mean, when we look at FinTech India, we basically say, hey, consumer facing, B2B, infra, India, global, all of those things. And we basically find investments in all of those segments. We are not doing portfolio construction from a, hey, you know, what are my constraints and what do I need to do? right? So I think when we are, we want to be, let's say if one of my objectives is that, hey, as far as fintech is concerned, we want to be one of the best fintech investors in the country. Now, what does that mean, right? I think that matters to me from a portfolio construction perspective than anything else. And, you know, like one of my very good LPs said, he's been in growth stage venture for a very long time and runs his own money now. And he basically said, when I started this firm to do our own capital deployment, I basically said, we'll never use the word deal in this company at all. But nothing is a deal. It's a business we want to own. It's a business we want to own. And he basically said that as a response to what I was telling him, that I was saying that, look, these are ideas around companies we want to build. And look, you know, founders build companies, investors don't, very clear about that. But when there are investors who deploy capital and there are investors who really like to build companies, right? They think of it that way, right? So we think of it that way. And you know why, because I explained that to you very early on. So I think all of that goes into how we think about portfolio construction. We actually, when we say fintech and better fintech or better edtech or better SaaS or better crypto, we basically want to say, hey, how do we have some of the best companies that will be created this decade in this portfolio? I think that is important for us. Now, having said that, let's switch to part two, which is, I think, a very valid question about, hey, you know, if you're doing this early stage investing model at scale, then how do you kind of provide, quote unquote, value to your founders, right? And look, I think we can debate about value itself, but I think the reality is that the best investors in the world will actually add tangible value to their founders over a long period of time. And that's why they will actually raise from those investors. And I'm actually very clear about the fact that if founders feel investors don't add any value and feel it in a disrespectful way, they should not raise money from those investors or from investors at all. It's unfair. It's a, you know, when you have a cap table, the cap table is made up of investors and founders and employees and everybody who is relevant to the success of that company, right? So now, having said that, value is an overloaded word for sure. And I think, again, because I've been an operator, you sort of know what value really means, let's say, right? So I think my view has been that, hey, you know, number one, I don't want to be everything for everyone. Number two, I want to be really good at what I can do and I choose to do amongst the five things that a founder may want. And we boiled it down to just two or three things, right? One is sort of this whole problem-solving oriented brainstorming. And we've done that with all, and that happens largely in the pre-seed stage, right? And pre-seed the most, where we are going from that complete unknown to the known territory. So that is where I think that happens the most, where it's all about, hey, what is this? 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 What's working? What's not working? Why is it not working? What is the... So it is driven by the founder. So what I have is I have 9 hours of office hours that our founders can book. It is on the calendar. They don't have to ask this, that I will show up. Those things are completely blocked. I don't do anything unless I am traveling in a completely time zone. It changes, otherwise it doesn't, which means we are just doing that. And look, I think how valuable that is, let my founders answer that, right? But I think we make decent progress and sometimes very significant progress when we're asking those questions, right? And it's a very two-way street. It is like three of us or four of us or five of us really brainstorming without any reservations, right? Which means we're talking, we're all vulnerable, and we go through that entire process, right? To the extent that in the last 15 months, there are two of our companies where we've given the money back because, and this came from the founders. And in one case, the founders basically said, you know, I think we were wrong. And I gave them a couple of months to say, hey, do you want to do this? Do you want to do this adjacency and things like that? Because look, I love them as people as well. But they came back and they said, no, I think we will not do justice to it. We were very passionate about this one thing and we think we are wrong. And here's why. So it works both ways, correct? So I think this brainstorming is one part. The second part is fundraising. This was a learning for me as well, wherein I think in 2018 and 19, I did not really grasp how much time and effort I would have to raise, I would have to spend in fundraising. But what happened is, I think we were taking some of these contrarian bets, right? And we were running out of people who would buy our theory. And I basically said, oh, wow, you know, either we keep circling around here every quarter, or I just expand the TAM. And that's where I basically said, okay, you know, let me figure out how I can be helpful alongside you. And we essentially built relationships globally. Several of them eventually came inbound as well. So today we have, you know, from pre-seed to seed to A, B, C, D, all the way to the sovereign funds, we have very good relationships, mutually respectful relationships, where I think once you have better on the cap table, I can guarantee our founders that as long as they're executing, as long as they're ready for that next conversation, they will never have to get an intro to a firm, right? So I think we want to make fundraising dramatically easier. And this is not about just introductions, right? I think with our introductions, a lot of context of our work and why we are doing something goes in as well, right? Which means that they are going to be entering the funnel with a serious process, not like, yeah, we'd love to know what's going on, right? So we're very serious about our time, investors' time, founders' time, everybody's time, right? So fundraising is something that we will continue to sort of make sure that our founders have the best fundraising sort of help available. Right. And it's very scalable. Right. I think the brainstorming part is honestly not scalable, but then it is required more at the pre-seed stage. And then the amount of time that is required there goes down. Right. And I think the third part we are saying is going back to this, you know, brainstorm is unscalable. Right. Which is, hey, you know, I actually don't even know everything. So I think we have what we call as Better Plus. Better Plus is essentially, you know, Better Plus, which is, you know, Vaibhav will only know so much. Are there friends of Better who can be additive in many other things? And we're very fortunate to have tons of well-wishers now across marketing, brand, sales, HR, tech, India, US, and things like that, who have been extremely supportive to our founders, right? I mean, some of them actually interview candidates for our founders as well, right? So I think this whole tribe that we have under Better Plus is something, I think we are just at the beginning of it. I think it's something that we want to invest a lot in. But I think that my goal, I told my founders the other day, I said, Better Plus should eventually be 10x more valuable than whatever I can do for you, right? So I think, that's what I would say about portfolio support. It's not perfect, but we just do these three things, and we want to scale those three things as much as we can. And we don't want to say that we can be everything, but these are the three things, and we want to improve and sharpen and get feedback from our founders as to how we can do that better. And lastly, I think I hear from our founders on this, but I think the group of founders, they're all, I mean, I resisted, you know, creating yet another WhatsApp group for a very long time until, you know, somebody said, dude, this is like super inefficient, right? So just put us and we'll figure things out. And I created it. We call it the Better Founders Forum. And I think, you know, it is so heartwarming, Jivraj, to see all of these founders just helping. It's basically an internal Quora, right? And there's no noise. I think everybody respects that there's no happy birthday, there's no this, there's no that. All of those are DMs. Everything that happens on BFF, we call it, is just questions and answers, right? And the other day, when somebody asked a question, I had no idea what the answer to that would be. And I was going to just put an icon, the sandbox, the sand clock thing, to just see when we get an answer. And I think before I could do that, there was an answer to that. So I think that is compounding quite amazingly, right? And these are real questions, right? They're very tactical questions. Hey, what did you do here? What did you do here? Did you have this contract? Do you know this? And from trusted people, right? Friends of yours, right? You all belong to this one little thing. So I think, again, not perfect on both of them, far from it, but I think we'll get better over time.
Absolutely. This is very helpful again, because goes to show that I think there's a lot of clarity of thought put into the fact that, okay, this will happen and this is how we're going to approach it. There's also cognizance to what your strengths are and how you can highlight the best. So I think it's very heartening to hear and very, very valuable for everyone listening.
And just one more thing there. Everything is a system. So everything is a system. Like just this morning, I forwarded three intros, two from a New York-based growth stage fund and another from an India-based fund to two of our founders who are reaching out. And they all came through from a portfolio page where there is a get intro request. I do have to put in the time to look at it, and validate it and only then pass it forward, because, you know, I want to be sensitive to our founders. But I think the systems thinking works very well. You know, what we tell our founders, we have to do it ourselves as well, I think.
In fact, I was going to exactly ask about that as an extension, right? Because one of the things that I would admirably look at is, you know, how you've productized network effects and almost put it on steroids, right? Like things around bridge, using tools, making it very, very efficient, and you've been able to scale it. So if you can spend maybe a minute or two on talking about how you maybe think about these things deeply and almost build this in foresight, because it's not like you're starting to do this now when the portfolio has grown. You've almost seen that this is going to happen and build in systems that can make it happen. So
look, I think it goes back to sort of a fundamental belief in building scalable things, right? So even building my own businesses in the past, I've always felt that every time it becomes people heavy, there is a problem. It's something that I feel is just inefficient, and I think inefficiency is something that just annoys me sometimes, let's say, right? So I think there has been a bias towards saying, hey, how can I be more efficient? How can I be more productive in everything? So I think as we were building better, even if you look at our website, you know, somebody said, dude, this is like an Excel sheet. And I said, yes, it is meant to be an Excel sheet. Because, you know, we literally have some of our VC friends who've said, look, I don't have to bother you anymore as long as this is updated, because we know what to do. So I think we think of everything as a system at Meta. Even the way I use my Gmail, we use AngelList for some of our SPVs. So you've seen my emails. If you go back to all of them, it's a template, right? So everything is a template in my email. Everything on the website, if there is a page exists, there is an action there. And the action is optimized over a period of time. Every page that we are working on the website is actually a funnel, wherein we say, hey, you know, here's what will happen and here's what we need to optimize for, right? So I think system thinking is very important just to do sort of the model that we are doing. Now, there are tons of systems that we still have to build, right? So I have a product roadmap myself as well, and we're still getting there. But I think the way we do content, the way we do networks, the way we do introductions, I use Bridge for introductions, which helps me measure it as well. I get feedback. It is just amazing, right? So I think we are sort of from a systems perspective, like a no-code, low-code VC platform, right? And there's a long way to go there. But I think that is very important for everything to scale, in the sense that you have to say that, look, for a lot of value to unlock from everything we have, the simple question is, how can Vaibhav be not part of it, right? So if I remove myself from the critical path, and that's what some of these things are, right? Like these two introductions this morning, I mean, I know that they're going to be really valuable for both parties, right? I mean, it took me 5 seconds each. So I think systems is going to be very important just to do more of what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. I think that's very useful, pretty much, because, I mean, keeping that foresight and having that builder's mindset, even as an investor, that I think personifies it in the best possible way and goes to show what it practically means. Great. I think Vaibhav, this covers a bunch of aspects around how you've gone ahead and built out better. One last thing, and this is something you mentioned over the conversation as well, is almost like building foresight, right? The other thing that investors do really well is maybe just take a zoom out view, take a macro lens to what are things that are changing across geographies and where can value be unlocked the most. And you, of course, have been early to multiple sectors, as you mentioned. And now as we look ahead as well, you've been writing about climate tech, writing about Web3, writing about a bunch of things. Talk to us about your personal framework to developing foresight, perhaps when it comes to markets. And how do you think investors can more actionably do this, almost get to the extent where you can maybe share tactical learnings for us as well? But I think that'll be an important piece to figure out, because it's almost like a question that, okay, how do you do this, right? So would love to know what you think about that.
Yeah, look, I think that is the hardest part, Jivraj, in the sense that what should we invest in? And I think the general view that I have is, going forward, what might make the best return for you as an investor is something that you don't know anything about today. So I think having a point of view, something along those lines, is important, so that it makes you uncomfortable about the future. And I think Andy Grove's book, Only the Paranoid Survive, is very important, because I think in this business of early stage investing, or investing in general as well, but I think my view is really more on the early stage side, you really have to be honest about not knowing where your next successes are going to come from. So I think that is kind of foundational to saying that, because, you know, to find something, you have to look. And to look at something, you have to be honest about, hey, you know, why am I looking? How am I looking? And things like that, right? And I think I keep telling myself that when your investments succeed, that does not make you any smarter ever. So I think all of those are very foundational. Having said that, now the next level is you can't just suddenly dream up things as well. So I think a lot of what informs me personally is my past experiences as well, or my experiences in general, current and past. So for example, I think, you know, several years back when I wasn't even using LinkedIn as much, but my LinkedIn account got suspended. And I was like, I could have said, okay, whatever, right? But then I said, oh, what the heck? I wrote a long email to their support. I followed up a bunch of times, nothing, right? And then I forwarded that entire thread and screenshots and everything to a friend of mine who was actually at LinkedIn. And I said, hey, you know, can you just send it to some people, right? I you know, I don't care. I don't use LinkedIn anyway. But, you know, I care about you blocking my account and not telling me why. And I think suddenly after a few days or weeks, I don't remember, the account was back up, no reasons given. We're back, and you know, it's a platform I love and I build on. That's why I was upset about why, how does it work, and things like that, right? Now, that I think became foundational to sort of thinking about what centralization and decentralization means philosophically. And you can't just read, if you're not from the space, you can't just read the Bitcoin white paper and say, ah, this is it. This is the next thing I'm going to invest in, because you won't know what the heck you're doing at all. But then my sort of philosophical alignment in whether you say muted centralization or towards partial or full decentralization was informed by some of this that has happened in the past, as well as what I've seen in terms of centralization of power itself. And you basically then say, ah, you know, I think this does make sense, and let me see what's going on. And I think there is that purpose and the why that has to go behind how you form your view about a segment, to be able to invest in a way that you can learn from it again, so that you can invest much better. So I think, and each of us can have different things, right? For me, let's say decentralization was that way. Education was very personal to me. My father and uncle were both educators for their, you know, in their careers, were engineering professors, principals, deans of universities and things like that. They've written books that have been read all over India. And I've seen the education system up close. And I've seen the pros and the cons and the good and the bad and the why of the bad and things like that. So let's say when I did SkillLink back in 2019, we basically said, oh, we want to build the engineering college of the future, where people go through a SkillLink program. They actually are confident about what they learned. So I think, you know, it goes into your conviction building process as well, and things like that, right? That foresight is a hard word or a big word, but I think for me personally, a lot of decisions have been informed by personal experiences, beliefs over a period of time. And then I think what does happen though, right? So I've been a B2B guy. So for SaaS, I'm able to build conviction very quickly, yes, no, both sides and things like that. But new segments are something that are informed by these experiences, right? Now, you and I could say that, look, I think Web3 and climate and health are the three big segments for us. Climate and health are more and more central as of today. But I think, what do we do tomorrow or the day after or the year after and so on and so forth? I actually don't know, and I'm not going to force fit it, right? I'm not going to read generative AI material and say, ah, now I'm going to listen to generative AI pitches because I think that's the future. In fact, what is happening is that, there's a founder called Amit Chaudhary of Davadost, and I'm a small investor in Davadost. And Amit and I, during the middle of the pandemic, were chatting about, hey, how do we want to think about pharmacy itself? And one of the things I said is, I said, what about education? And I said, if you build distribution-first content around educating about medicines and this and that and whatnot, and very you know, I was answering Amit's questions and we were discussing, like, kind of one of those brainstorming calls, right? Now, Amit goes back, comes back 6 months later, and he said, hey, you know, we actually did something about it. And I said, what? He said, we came up with this, we did a lot of research, and we basically said, a lot of people are searching, how, you know, what is this medicine, how does it work, and what are the side effects? So we said, oh, why don't we build content around it? And we said, instead of building text, India mein toh text koi padhta nahi hai, video, sab log video dekhte hai. So, you know, he said, we created videos and put it on YouTube and on our sites. Now, the tech behind it is actually deepfake technology and sort of in the realm of generative AI. Today, we are able to do 500,000 videos a month, right? So I, you know, you could say that I am invested in this future technology from before, right? But it was never informed or done from that perspective. Because look, I think when you are solving a problem, the problem is not looking for technology. The problem is looking for a solution, right? So I'm obsessed about the problem. I don't know if Bitcoin or Ethereum or some new form of blockchain technology is the future of crypto, but I do know why we are doing crypto in the first place. We're doing because we sincerely believe that too much centralization is a big problem for everything in the world. And it is inevitable that it's going to change, and we want to be part of that process, right? So I think it is a random mix of a lot of these things that I've said that sort of informs our judgment. We're doing health tech right now, and I was talking to somebody who runs a very large clinic chain in India, and we were just brainstorming about ideas about what he's learning and what we are learning and how we are thinking about distribution versus becoming specialists and things like that. So I think it's a lot of all of those things. I think kind of raw, again, you know, when you've been a founder for a long time, you can't just read stuff and make opinions, right? So you have to build and things like that. So I think it's all informed by that. So, you know, Amit's company, which is now spun out, by the way, it's called MedWiki. You know, we are more excited about it than we ever could. And it is, you know, it was not informed by saying that, hey, you know, we're going to use this new AI technologies to build something. We basically said, hey, you know, we have a problem. You know, we are essentially building the WebMD of the YouTube generation.
I think the highlight there is you can't force fit things because something is trending. You have to almost take a very hard stance. And that's where I think so much of what you mentioned before as well. Be honest about things that you don't know can become, and then figure out a way to get there. That's super helpful.
Look, I think borrowed conviction is probably the worst thing you can do to yourself. The worst thing you can do to yourself, because I think then you're as short-lived as you can be in this business of venture. So I think your own conviction, super high feedback loop, brutal honesty, and sort of systems to say, you know, and I think your purpose is very important as well. I mean, I mean, it's very, very hard, honestly, very hard, right? And even after all of that, I think like there's a joke in the VC world, right? You're always cash poor. And when you still do it for a very long time, you have to be very clear. So I think, you know, self-conviction and a feedback loop is really, really central to kind of doing it right and doing it for the long term.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think this has covered a bunch of things. As we closed up the conversation, I have a final two questions to ask you, Vaibhav. One of them is, of course, it would be very difficult to pull off a conversation with you without talking about your social media presence and how you've leveraged that and made it a lever towards building credibility, building a relationship with founders, and actually educating the ecosystem in ways which can be very valuable. What I want to understand, and I don't want to go into the personal brand aspect of it, but what I would love to know is what your framework is to articulate well enough, and how do you look at maybe putting out things that can be mutually beneficial? Is it something that you do as a self-keeping purpose where this is a public diary, or is it very conscious in nature? If you can maybe talk about those decisions that you make before putting out content as opposed to the content in and of itself, I think that'll be very helpful. And tell us what, you know, you stand for and why you do it to begin with.
Great question, Jivraj. Look, I think, first of all, to be honest, let's discuss why I'm doing it in the first place, right? So I think January 2018, when we started Better Capital with a lot of thought and everything, and we still, you know, now we know that how little we knew still that time. But one of the things that we were very clear about is that we didn't want to be number 15th or 25th in the pecking order of founders going and trying to raise a venture. And we said we have to break through and we have to say that, hey, can we earn a spot in the first set of investors that any founder would like to meet? You know, if we are a new firm with zero brand from the past, then how do we do it? And I think my gut feel that at that time was content. And that's why I started writing since that first month we started investing in, which is Jan of 2018, I think. And I wrote 3 to 5 times a week for the longest time, right? And I don't know who read that time, but I think that is one thing I have been consistent with. And I think it has compounded way beyond what I would have imagined. Right now, I think I have not. I mean, it's not that I wrote earlier. I think was a terrible writer, and I have never written before. Right, so I think it was an experiment. So it was self learning for myself as well. I said, okay, you know, this is my conclusion. I need this to work, and which means that I'm going to do it, and I'm going to get better at it. Now, once I knew why I was doing it, I think the second question was how to do it and what to write. And then again, I think you go back to the honesty, right? You basically say, hey, you know, am I going to really write what Peter Thiel and Reid Hoffman have said it very, very well, right? I said, no, I'll butcher it. I'll write a worse version of it. So I said, okay, you know, let me actually write what nobody writes and what everybody wants to hear, which is the reality, which is what is happening on my WhatsApp and email inbox every single day. See, writing about real stuff is actually very hard because it can be controversial. You can have folks who might who might not take it in the right way and things like that. So you want to walk a thin line. And I'm not here to write about controversial stuff and argue about it, right? In fact, I write a disclaimer then saying that, hey, you know, if this is for you, take it. Whatever is relevant, take it and leave the rest, sort of a thing, right? So I said, we'll write real stuff and we'll write stuff that we think has to be written. That's what we did. We wrote it in a very unbiased, unopinionated way, while still continuing to write what we think we are seeing. And whether it's about my big thread about why investors pass, whether it's my thread about the downsides of bootstrapping, which were my own experiences, or any of those things, right? So I think the framework was really driven by, hey, I think this is what my founders are discussing with me, and some parts of it are relevant to everybody. And how do I write it in a way where it is helpful, informative, additive, without being opinionated, because I don't know everybody else's situation. And I think we've been fortunate that for majority of the part, it has been taken in the right way. It has been engaged with the correct way. If you see even, you know, threads where there has been discussion with different points of views and things like that. For me, it is all additive to the conversation. You know, it is not about right or wrong at all. So I think that is sort of, Jivraj, helped us build this community around Better, which sort of has become the foundation of whatever little brand we have today. And I think that has been central. And I think it has played out in many ways, by the way, right? So the downsides of bootstrapping actually took me a lot of time to write. I knew that I wanted to write it because I have bootstrapped for the longest time. And I know I love it a lot, but I also know what the real constraints are, right? And I actually had a founder who basically moved away from his bootstrap business to start a venture scale business and raised in which I invested. And he basically said, look, that particular, and I wrote about 5 or 6 threads there, I mean, articles in that thread. And he said, I really echoed with every one of them. And he is one of the few who basically said, I also noticed that you wrote them in an increasing, you know, scale of intensity, and which I did. And I was just amazed to see that he picked up on it. And he picked up on it because he said, that's exactly how I felt. I just needed somebody to tell me that. And so I think when all of that happens, I think it helps you kind of, that's a feedback loop. To go back to your question about what informs the framework, that's a feedback loop, right? I think we do, I write on Twitter as well, it's just been a year. So obviously a very different format. I'm just exploring. I'm not writing to share an opinion. I'm actually writing to create a conversation. Writing to create a conversation is something central for me. I think that's where I learn the most. And that's where I think the community that is formed around Better engages in a way that is additive to everybody. So I think that's been the framework and it has been, it is an important, our content is an important part of Better.
Absolutely. And I really found it interesting to know how you've gone about building it. I love the part about the conversation. And yeah, I think of multiple aspects. I think so many of us have also seen you build it out over a period of time and it compounds amazingly well. So kudos to what you do. And hopefully you keep writing and we keep getting informed and keep having conversations owing to it. But this has been very interesting, Vaibhav. I'm not sure that this is going to be a fitting end because we've discussed such a variety of things. But this is a personal favorite and I saved it for the last because I don't want to sound stereotypical and ask you about time management. But as a prioritization mechanism, with the variety of things that you have to do as an ambit, right? With new investing, looking at investments, opportunities, looking at your current portfolio and then also being informed about the future and multiple different things that we are not aware about. How do you enable each of these pieces well enough? And what is your framework to prioritize life and variables that are going on? I think I would love to know that because it seems to be a very challenging statement from afar. And I'd love to know what your design problem is for this particular aspect.
No, I think it's work in process in short. But look, I think it is an important thing that I obsess about a lot. What happens is, you know, you could say that, hey, you know, we're on a good path. Let me take it easy. I'm just not that kind of person, right? Which means that if you're on a good path, you can be on a better path and so on and so forth. And that's where learning lies as well, right? So I think you're always looking to say, how can I do this better? How can I improve my decision making? And venture is so intellectually challenging. I love that part about it. Because if you're honest, I mean, you can lose sleep over it, which obviously is a bad thing, but I think in a good way. And I think that has been sort of the driving factor in the sense that, you know, it has helped me understand that whatever I want to do in terms of my systems to scale this, manage my time, think about the future is actually driven by the fact that I actually love everything about it, the way it is set up. And I don't want to be in a rush, which means that I'm just going to incrementally improve this and let it compound for the next 20 years. You know, at a recent Diwali dinner, somebody asked me, what's your end game? And I said, this is my end game. I am doing my end game. And I think when you put that in perspective, Jivraj, right? Because we are all fighting for time management, right? And I think the best, if you're good or bad at it, and if you're successful or not at it, you should ask your wife and kids. And usually the answer is no, right? Which means that that's why I said it's a work in process. But I think when you say that, hey, this is my end game, I am living my end game, then it actually helps you, you know, sort of not be overwhelmed all the time. It helps you look at all the overwhelm that you're feeling every day and say, how do I systematize it? Because I do not want, I'll just do bad work when I'm overwhelmed, right? So I think for me, it is about saying that, look, this is a long journey. Right. And I don't want to be successful in 2 years. I want to be successful over 20 years. And when I say that, it just helps you slow down in that overwhelm part. Right. And then I have a very simple framework, which is every time you feel even an ounce of overwhelm, you basically ask what is causing it. And that is a task list for me because I either want it to be managed properly, taken out of my plate, and all of those things, which brings me to the second part I have, which is saying no. So I think I just say no to a lot of different things, right? And I think that has helped me focus on what really matters. And it sort of helps you helps you be clear that, hey, this is my end game. And for my end game to last for a very long time and to do really, really well, saying no is an important part of the process, right? Now, obviously, when I'm saying no, it's I'm not saying no very easily, but I think that framework helps me prioritize correctly. And I think the bigger question, though, is that I think no matter how hard we all try, I think ambition comes in the way of correct work-life balance. And I think that's a very personal thing, right? At different stages of your life, you really have to say, hey, what's more important and what's less important and how do you manage it? Now, once you have control over what you're doing, both on the work and life front, you can manage it better. So that has been sort of my guiding factor all throughout my life, which is at every fork, I chose the route that had more freedom in it. More freedom. That's it. At every fork, more freedom. That's where I'm going. Not more money, not more fame, not more this, not more that. More freedom. That's it. Because that gives you control.
Wow. That's phenomenal. I think that's lovely. Thank you so much, Vaibhav, for your time. I think this has been an incredible conversation because we've covered a bunch of very core fundamentals to early stage investing, early stage starting up as well. And you've poured out all of your learnings over a period of time in a very candid way. I'm super certain that this is going to be very helpful to everyone listening. I have thoroughly enjoyed the last 60, 80 odd minutes. And I can only thank you for your time. I hope you had fun.
It was lovely, Jivraj. Thank you for doing it. I know it was a long time coming, but I'm really happy we got to it. Thank you.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.